Welcome to One Mic Black History. I'm your host, Country Boy, and this is the start of season two. And today's episode is about the tragic life of Billie Holiday. Billie Holiday was one of the most famous jazz singers of all time and the superstar of her day. She rose to prominence in the 1930s with her unique style, along with her emotional intensity, innovative techniques, and touching songs that reinvented the conventions of modern singing and performance. Of course, if you love this, if you like this, please consider donating to our Patreon page. You can find a link down in the show notes. Also, you can find all our old episodes at onemichistory.com. Don't forget to give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. But without further ado, let's get started. Born Eleanor Fagan, or Eleanor Harris, on April 7th, 1915 in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Holiday's early years were mostly rumors because of her ghost-written autobiography, Lady Sings the Blues. But it would be honest to say that she did not have a stable early life. Her mother, Sadie Fagan, was only a teenager when she had her, and her father was widely believed to be Clarence Holiday, who would eventually become a successful jazz singer and play guitar for pianist Fletcher Henderson. He was an infrequent visitor in Eleanor's life growing up, and in the 1920s, Eleanor's mother, Mellup Philip Grow, and for a few years of Eleanor's life, it was somewhat stable. But after the end of that marriage, Eleanor and Sadie were struggling on their own once again. Many times, Eleanor was left to the care of other people, and she started skipping school. Her and her mother went to court for her truancy, and she was sent to the House of Good Shepherd, a facility for troubled African-American girls, in January of 1925. She was only 9 years old and one of the youngest girls there. She was returned to the care of her mother in August of 1925, only to return again to the House of Good Shepherd in 1926 after she was sexually assaulted. In 1929, Eleanor's mother moved to New York in search of better job opportunities and began working at a house of ill repute in Harlem. Around 1930, Eleanor began to show up to jazz clubs to audition and sing with the resident pianist. She debuted at obscure Harlem nightclubs and shared the tips with other dancers and comedians on the bill. It was around this time that she would reinvent herself as Billy after film star Billy Dove. Although she never received any technical training and she never learned how to read music, Holiday quickly became an active participant in the Harlem jazz scene. At 18, Holiday was discovered by producer John Hammond while she was performing at one of those obscure jazz nightclubs. Hammond was instrumental in getting Holiday recording work with up-and-coming band leader Benny Goodman. With him, she recorded her first record with the studio group. She sang vocals on several tracks, including her first commercial release, Your Mother's Son-in-Law, and the 1934 top 10 hit, Riffin' the Scotch. By then, she was on the verge of superstardom, and from 1935 to 1941, Holiday's career would accelerate rapidly. Holiday went on to record hit after hit with jazz pianist Teddy Wilson and made several singles, including What a Little Moonlight Can Do and Miss Brown to You. Also in 1935, she appeared with Duke Ellington in the film Symphony in Black. In 1936, Holiday met and befriended saxophonist Lester Young, who was a part of Count Basie's orchestra on and off for years. He lived with Holiday and his mother for a while, and Young gave Holiday the nickname Lady Day, and in return, she called him Prez, which was her way of saying she thought he was the greatest. In 1937, Holiday began touring with Count Basie's orchestra and was an unstoppable musical force, suited for top billing all across the United States. In 1938, Art Shaw even invited her to perform in front of his orchestra, making Billie Holiday the first black woman to work with an all-white orchestra, which was unheard of at the time. In the late 30s, Holiday began performing at New York's Cafe Society. Holiday also debuted 2 of her most famous songs, God Bless the Child and Strange Fruit. Columbia, her recording company in 1939, was not interested in Strange Fruit at all. It was a horrific depiction of lynching in the southern United States. The music was written just for Billie Holiday, and it became a trademark of her concerts. It was considered the first protest song of the civil rights era, and the lyrics were so controversial that her label, Columbia, refused to record it. So Holiday recorded the song with an independent Commodore label instead. This ballad was considered her signature ballad, and the controversy surrounding the song caused radio stations to ban the record, which helped make it a further hit. Black America fully embraced Strange Fruit, but the nightclub scene, which was primarily composed of white patrons, had mixed reactions to the song. After witnessing Holiday's performance, some in the audience members would applaud to their hands hurt, while others would bitterly walk out the door. After debuting Strange Fruit, Holiday received a warning from Harry J. Anslinger and the Federal Bureau of Narcotics, which was a government agency that lasted from about 1930 to 1968 in now what is the Drug Enforcement Administration. Anslinger was a known racist and believed that drugs caused black people to overstep their bounds in American society, and that jazz singers embraced marijuana and created the devil's music. Anslinger and the FBN told Holiday to never sing this song again, and she refused and continued to sing Strange Fruit. And after her refusal, it caused him to devise a plan to destroy her using her drug addiction against Holiday. Over the next few years, Holiday began singing songs of stormy relationships, including Ain't Nobody Business, If I Do, and My Man. These songs reflected her personal romances, which were often self-destructive and abusive. She married James Monroe in 1941, and she was already known as a heavy drinker, but Holiday picked up a new habit from her husband of smoking opium. While the marriage didn't last, Holiday's problems with substance abuse would continue. In 1944, she signed with the prestigious Decca Records. While she was still creating more classics and still married, she started a relationship with trumpeter Joe Guy, and he would introduce her to heroin. After the death of her mother in 1945, Holiday began drinking more heavily and escalated her drug use to ease her grief and pain. Despite her personal problems, Holiday still remained a major star in the jazz world and appeared with her idol, Louis Armstrong, in the 1947 film New Orleans. Also in 1947, Anslinger launched his plan against Holiday. She was arrested of narcotic possession at the Atticus Hotel by black FBN agent Jimmy Fletcher. During the arrest, she was stripped naked and berate Fletcher and then proceed to pee on the floor of the hotel. Holiday's arrest, trial, and imprisonment occurred over the course of less than 2 weeks in late May 1947. The New York Daily News will report that federal agents will be cracking down on other musicians on the same drug charges that snared Billie Holiday. And Anslinger would state during congressional testimony, reassuring congressmen that his crackdown would not affect the good musicians, only the jazz type. At her trial, rather than decry Holiday as a danger to society, prosecutors described her as a victim of the worst type of parasite you can imagine and accused heroin dealers of following her around and overcharging her for her drugs. But rather than defend her, Holiday's lawyer suggested that she plead guilty and said that she would likely get probation and be sent to a hospital to treat her addiction. Instead, the judge sentenced her to a year and a day in prison and told her that the government was going to give her benevolent treatment at a reformatory. Holiday would spend her sentence in the federal rehabilitation facility in Alderson, West Virginia. After her release, she faced new challenges. Because of her conviction, she was unable to get her cabaret license to play at cabarets and clubs, and the loss of her cabaret card caused a major loss in her earnings for Holiday. But she was determined to soldier on, and she was still able to perform at concert halls and had 22 sold-out shows at Carnegie Hall not long after her release. With some help of John Levy, a New York nightclub owner, Holiday was later play at the New York Club Ebony and Levy became her boyfriend and manager by the late 1940s. And it was around this time that she was once again arrested for narcotic possession, but eventually acquitted on all charges. While her hard living had taken a toll on her voice and her voice become more rugged, Holiday continued to tour and record into the 1950s. In 1952, Holiday began a 5-year run with Norman Gratz of the Clive Nerve label. Together, they made over 100 new recordings, and she would redefine herself as a torch singer, which was someone that sings unrequited love songs. And she even appeared on TV twice, on The Tonight Show with Steve Allen and CBS's Sound of Jazz. She also had a successful tour of Europe as part of the London Feathered Package. It was in the late 50s that Holiday became involved with Louis McKay. The two would become arrested for narcotics possession again in 1956 and got married in Mexico in 1957. Like many of the men in her life, McKay used Holiday's name for money and to advance himself. And after years of lackluster recordings and record sales, her main revenue source was club concerts, and she seldom received royalties for her later songs. In 1958, her royalty check was only $11. Also in 1958, she would sign with Columbia Records and began working with John Hammond, who was instrumental with her early in her career. Holiday would record Lady in Satin in 1958 with the Ray Ellis Orchestra. The songs on the album showcased her rougher sounding voice, but still conveyed her emotional intensity, and she gave her final performance in New York on May 25th, 1959. It was not long after this event that Holiday would check herself into a New York hospital for heart and lung issues, along with cirrhosis of the liver, due to decades of alcohol and substance abuse. The singer was only an emaciated version of herself, and her once heartful voice was now withered and raspy. Still addicted to heroin, Anslinger had her arrested for narcotic possession while she was still in the hospital. The agents raided her room and even handcuffed her to her bed. She was placed under armed guards, and when she showed gradual signs of recovery, Anslinger's agents forbid the doctors from giving her methadone, and Holiday passed away within days in July 17, 1959. She was only 44 years old. 3,000 people turned out to say goodbye to Lady Day at her funeral at St. Paul's Episcopal Roman Catholic Church. In her final years, Holiday had gradually been swindled out of her earnings, and she died with only 70 cents to her name. Considered one of the greatest jazz vocalists of all time, Holiday's lasting legacy is in the world of jazz and pop music. She garnered 23 posthumous Grammys and was inducted to the Grammy Hall of Fame, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and the Rhythm and Blues Hall of Fame. Her autobiography was made into a movie in 1979 called Lady Sings the Blues, with famed singer Diana Ross playing the part of Holiday. It was nominated for an Oscar and won a Golden Globe. Despite Holiday's many hit songs, Strange Fruit would always be her defining work. Not only was it an expression of political protest, but it was a masterpiece of African-American art displayed for millions to hear. In 1999, Time magazine designated Strange Fruit the song of the century. Thank you. This has been One Mic. I'm your host, Country Boy. If you like this, please consider donating to my Patreon page or buying me coffee. You can find that below in the show notes. Also, if you want to hear more of my episodes, you can join us at onemichistory.com. Also, please give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Thank you. Peace.